If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Alfheim.
Well, good evening. Good evening. This is Chris Alfheim with The Rational Revolution here with my favorite guest host, Mr. Tony Palmieri. How are you, Tony?
I'm really good, Chris. Good evening.
Good evening. It's Thursday. It's dark. It's damp. And I believe it's going to get worse. What's this daylight savings time thing? Is that Saturday?
Yes, it is. Now, that's fall backwards, right?
Yeah, it's fall backwards.
All right.
And to me, I actually like it better. I know that sounds funny, but I go to bed earlier that way. I don't know. I feel like when the clocks change, it's like, yeah, I'm ready for bed now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Am I the only one?
No.
All right, maybe we could just stay there.
Yeah.
I'm excited about today's show. We have my friend, Secretary of State, Sarah Godleski, with us tonight. And she, I believe, is traveling today, but I'm excited to talk about her, about all things about her background.
Yeah.
Then we're going to talk about kind of how she ended up in Madison to begin with. And then we're going to get into the whole how she ended up being Secretary of State, as well as really what that role has been and what she plans to do with it. So
yeah.
I think that's really fun. Again, thanks for joining us here on WGBW and the Oshkosh Air Support. Sarah, are you on the line with us, my friend?
I am, Chris. Hello. It's so great to join you guys tonight.
Well, hello. Where are you traveling to or from tonight?
So we were in Kenosha, and we're meeting with the Kenosha County Clerk and a lot of the municipal clerks in that area, talking about how we can best work together. There's a lot of things we, you know, can be doing for Wisconsin. We're really excited about it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. We're looking forward to hearing about that. So let's start and just give everybody a little bit of background. We have you on here for a while, so let's enjoy it. Tell us, just tell us where you come from. Tell us your background, you know, what you've been doing, you know, getting to this point.
Well, I would love to, Chris. As I can tell you, I'm a proud fifth-generation Wisconsinite from Western Wisconsin, and I'm the daughter of two public school teachers. So a shout out to all of your listeners who are in public education. It is so important to our future. And it was really my parents who instilled this kind of commitment to public service. So
yeah.
I had kind of my first job out of college was, believe it or not, working and supporting the Pentagon. So I was in national security. And what I think is really interesting about all of this is that my degree was peace and conflict resolution.
Really?
So, yes. So you guys can only imagine when somebody with a degree in peace and conflict resolution is walking up to the Pentagon. I think they were like, oh my gosh, who is this young woman in her 20s? Like, we'll give her maybe a week at best, and then she will quit and go back to Wisconsin.
I don't think that happened.
Well, let's just say a week turned into a few weeks, turned into a month, turned into a few months, and I ended up almost there for a little less than a decade.
Wow.
And started with the Assistant Secretary of the Army and then worked my way all the way up to the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. And it was a really great learning opportunity.
I guess so.
I learned a lot and appreciated all the work that, you know, lots of folks that they do and the sacrifices that they give.
Isn't it amazing how little we know about things? Right. I mean, most of us, the extent of our knowledge with the Pentagon is there's a lot of people in ties and uniforms there. It's a very large, thick, strange-shaped building. We really don't know. I mean, most of us don't even know really what goes on in the Pentagon. I will say that my godfather, retired lieutenant colonel, did work at the Pentagon, and he shared a shredder with Oliver North.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Just a little tip. Did you get any of that stuff while you were there?
Well, no, nothing like that, but I will say something that was just really interesting for me is that my first project that I worked on was located in the what's called the E-ring of the Pentagon, and the E-ring is that outside ring,
yeah,
like where the windows are, And the kind of the first person I worked for was a guy named Colonel Powell. And he was sharing with me about his 9/11 story.
Wow.
So basically it was this, you know, just heartfelt story where he was in this room, which was actually a conference room next door. They were all meeting and the plane crashed. It went right through, right where we, you know, where I ended up working, and how he was the only one that actually survived out of his entire team was there that day.
My goodness.
But just, it was interesting, like, learning about these things and just the appreciation that you have.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. I had gone to a conference a number of years back, and there was a gentleman who spoke, who his office was in that outer ring, as you describe. And he excused himself to go to the restroom. And between the conference room that he was in and the bathroom that he used is where the plane struck. In between, he walked in front of it.
Amazing.
And it's just, again, anybody that puts themselves out there into a position of service, we can't even, you know, the danger that exists just naturally, we can't even really fathom that. So, again, huge respect to everybody that shows up and continues to do their best to help all of us here in the country. That goes on, it just goes unnoticed all the time. All right, so you came to the Pentagon. You made your way up. You worked for Colin Powell, so that's cool. You need a little bit of background on that. And then what? Where'd you go from there?
Well, I was over kind of the D.C. Beltway and had a really unique opportunity to get into local government. And so I became the inaugural director of strategy and performance management for one of the fastest growing counties in the country. And we were doing everything from how do you, you know, create a citizen scorecard and how can you provide more transparency and accountability with government. And I really, you know, it was very different than working in a federal, with the largest bureaucracy in the world, one could argue,
right?
As a part of the national security, but then moving to local government where, you know, we're talking about everything from how are we going to use more renewable energy and what are we thinking about with expanding our roads and our bridges and how can we afford this? And, but it was really interesting work. And while I loved it, I just had a unique opportunity to do microfinance in India, providing access to capital, and just really was just talked about that whole experience about seeing how access to capital can transform entire communities. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do more of this.
You know, that's
it was just, you could just see it directly.
I don't know why, but I was just thinking about capital on the way up here. It's amazing how people's families and anybody's world changes when they have access to capital. It seems like a silly statement, but we were just talking about, I purchased a rental property the other day, and it seems like such a forward, obvious thing to do, but it's out of reach for most people because you have to have the capital for the down payment in order to do it.
Right.
In my business, in marketing, it seems like it's not that big of a deal. But if you don't have 3 months worth of capital to invest in your marketing plan, you can't get up and running. Small amounts of capital are the difference in finding success long term and not. And, you know, some of us have had the luxury of you know, having it or even a few dollars given to be able to go to college. Little bits of capital make a difference. And in the business world, in the personal world, all of those things are really valid. That's a great, great thing to be working on.
Well, and I think just to your point, what was just so fascinating for me is how does Wisconsin compare to every place else? And at the time, this was back in like 2016, 2017, Wisconsin was rated 50th when it came to access to capital and helping startups, for example.
Wow.
And the amount of money Silicon Valley was getting in one day is what Wisconsin was getting in an entire year.
Wow.
Which is just infuriating on so many levels because, to your point, Chris, like, people are doing the best they can and are bootstrapping to help start their business and really live the American dream.
Right.
But you've got to also make access to capital part of those opportunities. And in addition to Wisconsin just not having access, I mean, communities of color and women were even further behind in their difficulties with accessing.
Do you know what our ranking is today? Are we still number 50? Do you know?
We have made significant improvements. I don't think that we are better than the top 25, but okay. I think we're not the 50th anymore. I think we're probably, I don't even know. I know that we've gotten a lot better.
That's good.
And within the last decade, thank goodness. Exactly.
Were you involved, I'm guessing you were, in the bounce back initiatives with Governor Evers?
Because I think one of the things that we really tried to look at when I was treasurer is how can we leverage our investment authority to be supporting and providing capital to small businesses, particularly small businesses and businesses, whether they are owned by communities of color or women. Because what was interesting, too, with the whole recovery and bounce back program is they often required some of these smaller micro businesses, like I'm talking about the barber shop or, you know, the nail salon or so on and so forth. They didn't always have a relationship with their bank.
Right.
In the way that they needed to maybe be one of the early ones in line to get that access to capital. And so it was, how can we work with in this current structure to make sure some of these businesses can get the capital that they need, because it was really, a lot of it relied on potentially sometimes your relationships with your bank.
Yeah. We got about 1 minute before we head into our first break here. So tell us, as we kind of talk about this stuff, you went from the background with Pentagon, working then in municipal and funding, and then you ended up as the treasurer. What made you decide to run for treasurer?
Well, it was the whole access to capital issue. So when I'm sitting here looking at Wisconsin being rated 50th, and I'm looking at the investment abilities that the state treasurer has, and I'm looking at all these other treasurers across the country that are doing good things, I'm like, oh, I'll call the state treasurer and see how I can be helpful, since this is the work that I do.
Yeah.
And the treasurer didn't call me back, wasn't returning my emails, and then I tried to find out. Trying to get rid of his own office.
Oh, for crying out loud. All right, hang in here with me. We are heading into a break. I am looking forward to plenty more conversation with Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. This is The Rational Revolution with Chris Halfheim and Tony Palmieri. Come on back at the other side of the break. See you soon. Welcome back to The Rational Revolution. I'm Chris Alfheim. You know, I hope you take a second, and if you haven't downloaded that Civic Media app, do it. It allows you to listen to us and anybody else on the Civic Media Nation anytime you want. But you can also hit the button that says text, and you can join our conversation. Today, we are talking with Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, and she is with us on the phone. She's a busy lady traveling all over the state, making things happen. She's very much a mover and a shaker,
haven't met her.
I mean, I don't know what you drink in the morning to get your day going, but, you know, go ahead and pass on that secret recipe if you have it. So at the break, actually, you know, and you have like a 5-year-old, don't you?
I wish he was 5, Chris. He's 3.5. So
I almost said 3, and then I thought, 3.5. You know, what can women not accomplish? I'm just going to put it out there. I mean, we have kids, we have spouses, we have wonderful jobs, we do our best to cause good around the world. Look at you go. I love that. All right, so now, you are back in, and we left off as you are looking at the treasurer position, and you found, as you left us, that the past treasurer was doing what again?
So, he was trying to get rid of the office.
I remember that, yeah.
I mean, how ridiculous is this? You run for an office that is written into the Constitution to be a check and balance for the people of Wisconsin, which I think is pretty darn important when we think about our fiscal responsibility. And here's a guy that's like, no, I don't think we need it. let's just consolidate all the power, give it to the governor and give it to the legislature.
Yeah,
and,
apparently, yeah. we're not really into democracy right now. I mean, there was a wave of that. Apparently, that's just checks and balances. Who needs that? We're doing
who needs that?
So tell us what the, again, I'm working our way through because I think this is great for all of us because we all have to show up and vote. And honestly, no one knows. I mean, I'm going to say it. I may have voted for the guy that was trying to close the office because it's one of those things you don't pay attention to. There may not be a lot of money put on it. So in reality, what is the role? I know you're no longer treasurer, but what is the role and what did you do while you were in that role to help solidify its position of checks and balance?
Yeah, well, I mean, the role can do a lot of different things, but and to kind of boil it down, it's everything from the fiscal watchdog for the state. So, you know, we're responsible for whether it's signing the state's checkbook. We delivered the taxpayer annual report that provided transparency about where our tax dollars go and what you get for this money, to our work with economic security. And this was something that was relatively new to the office that I thought was really important was how are we helping folks generate wealth? And whether that is thinking about home ownership to child savings accounts, but this is all really important into making sure that you can have the quality of life that folks deserve, hardworking Wisconsinites deserve. To thinking through our work with win-win investments, how are we effectively managing, you know, the $1.4 billion of investment funds? And, you know, for us, this money helped to generate, you know, returns for public schools. And so those were kind of the three areas that I focused in on. As treasurer for the people of Wisconsin.
Wow. You know, again, we take so many things for granted. Many of us are in situations where we just go along life. You know, we have what we need. It's time to buy a house. We buy a house. And we move forward. And a lot of that stuff, you know, again, we look at our backyards as this is what everyone feels like.
Mm.
No, mm-hmm. No, that's not really it. So there have to be people, there have to be organizations and departments that are saying, hey, let's look out for the better of the entire state. And the entire state means everybody that looks like you and that doesn't look like you have an opportunity to find success and help make the state even better. So
yeah.
Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, like some of the things that we were fighting for were things like, for example, retirement security.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the studies that came across my desk when I was state treasurer was how if we do nothing and allow the status quo to continue, we're going to see 400,000 seniors in poverty by 2030. And that's a significant number.
Absolutely.
And if you think about it, like that's going to cost the state billions of dollars if we don't start doing something now with whether that is providing more access and helping folks save for retirement. Because the thing is that it's not that folks don't want to save, it's that they often don't have the mechanism to save, whether it's their business doesn't provide it or they don't have a state opportunity. And so it was, you know, things like that where we were, you know, talking with folks and working to come with a solution because money's not red or blue, it's green.
Yeah.
And people deserve to have that financial security. They work hard every day.
And I'm going to question that just a little bit. You know I'm a money lady. But my struggle with that whole conversation is the solution to having people that are going to be in crisis in retirement, in my opinion, is not that they don't have options. I mean, there are options everywhere. I mean, truly. But it's a matter of if their wages, if their living wages aren't enough that they can afford to live, to pay their bills, to send their, you know, to put food on their families and retire, that is the issue. Creating money at you could have the best pension plan on the planet in terms of management, administration, and returns, but if you don't put any money in it, it will not return for you. So again, what we try and do is find solutions. But for me, all those people that are struggling, the reality is they're struggling because the cash flow into those houses is not enough to provide them what they need to live and for today and in the future. So there's economic issues all over the place.
For sure. And I think no one's going to argue that when we're still paying folks $7.25, like that's just not a livable wage. You just can't.
It's a huge deal, you know. And again, I try real hard to be purple, and I'm pretty moderate overall. But when you end up having a conversation, and someone who bought their first home in 1992 starts ripping on somebody today for not owning a house yet, we have to my first house was $50,000. How much was your first house, Tony?
60, maybe.
Yeah. Can you find a $60,000 house anywhere today?
No.
No. And if $60,000 house, you probably needed 5 to 10% down.
Yeah, 10.
Right. I'm pretty sure I took $5,000 to the closing of my first house. And to be honest, again, we talk about access to capital. I went to my boss and asked him for my next year's increase in wages in cash. So technically, I didn't have the capital either. I just found a way to get it in terms of taking my salary in advance. So these little things, but it was a small amount of money.
Amazing.
We got 1 minute before we head into the next break. But again, we're talking with Secretary of State and all things awesome, Sarah Godleski.
We got to talk to her about her U.S. Senate campaign.
We got so much to talk about. We have so much more information. We haven't even gotten to the fact that you're Secretary of State yet, which is a fun story. So on the other side of the break, we're going to start there. How you ended up in this spot, what Governor Evers has to do with it, and lots more about all things Secretary of State and Sarah Godleski. Come on back on the backside.
Tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
If you'd like to join the Rational Revolution and engage, download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Elfheim.
Hey, welcome back. This is Tony Palmieri, and Chris is still here. Don't worry. And we have Sarah Godleski with us. Sarah, before we went on break, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about your United States Senate race before we get into how you became Secretary of State. And, you know, in that United States Senate race, I was one of many people. I wasn't sure who to vote for. And on the Democratic side, there were a lot of really talented candidates, and, you know, including you and Tom Nelson and, of course, Mandela Barnes and Alex Lazary and my friend Stephen Olicara. And what I noticed is, I was at events where all of you were there, and you seem to be the most relaxed at kind of like what I'll call retail politics, kind of like working the room. Is that something that you developed over time? I mean, I noticed that some of your competitors were a little bit more awkward in that setting. What's your philosophy of campaigning?
I'm one of those people, Tony, where one of the best parts of, I think, running for office is meeting folks and listening to their stories.
And you seem to genuinely enjoy it.
I do, Tony. As my parents would tell you, I was the kid that would go trick-or-treating, but I would start talking to people at the doors as like a six-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, what are you cooking for dinner? Oh, is that your favorite meal? Or, you know, like, and my dad would be like, come on, Sarah, we got to go to the next house. And then I'd come back the next year and I'd be like, oh, you were cooking chili. What are you having this year? Or I really, you know, I think it's a real privilege to be able to run for office. Well, and I think part of that privilege is people just open up.
I can only speak for, you know, my little place in Oshkosh. You were getting a lot of people fired up, and I know there were a lot of people that wanted to vote for you. And then I don't know what the polls were showing. I know so much of politics is poll-driven now. But you and all of the people except for Mandela Barnes dropped out before Election Day. So what happened? Why did you withdraw from the race before the actual primary election?
Well, I decided to run for the U.S. Senate because I thought that Wisconsin deserved better than Ron Johnson. I mean, we have an insurrectionist, anti-abortion, anti-you name it guy representing our state. And I'm like, we deserve better. And at the time, it just seemed really clear that we needed to all rally around Mandela and do what we could to make sure he was positioned in a place to beat Ron Johnson. Because as we all know, in Wisconsin, you only win by a few votes per ward.
Yeah.
And every day as you get closer to that November election day matters. And so in my mind, it was, we've got to, you know, rally around Mandela and do everything we can to defeat Ron Johnson, because that's, for me, was the most important reason. That's why I decided to even get in the race in the first place.
Right. All right. Well, it didn't pan out. And Mandela, of course, did not win the race. And Doug La Follette did win another term as Secretary of State. He'd been in there. I love Doug La Follette. He's a legend of the state.
He was in position for 73 years.
I don't know if it was that long, but it was for many years.
116 in dog years.
So he won re-election again, and then he almost immediately after he won re-election announced he was retiring, and then you were appointed. So I know that the Republicans were up in arms over this, Sarah, because they believe that you and La Follette and Governor Evers had some kind of like corrupt deal that you were going to be the person. So why don't you just tell us what happened there?
Well, I think everybody was shocked, and including myself, when Doug just decided that he needed to retire. And I will never forget kind of how it all unfolded. Is I was, getting ready to go back to potentially working in our family business. And I get this call that the governor wants to see me. And I remember thinking, what do I need to be prepared for? Am I in trouble? And they're like, no, Sarah, just, be yourself. And the governor started talking about all the work that we had done in the state treasurer's office and really transformed the constitutional office. And he's like, I'd like to see you do this again as Secretary of State. And I'm like, oh my gosh. He's like, Doug resigned from his office and I'd like to appoint you. And I responded by saying, okay, do I have a few weeks or months to prepare? Because I like to be prepared for these things. And he's like, what are you doing on Friday? And I'm like, 48 hours Friday? And he's like, yes. And so it all happened very quickly. I literally was sworn in that Friday morning in my Packer pajamas. So I can't make this story up. I got a knock on my door at 8 a.m. and it was the legal counsel for the governor's office. And she was like,
wow.
I'm here to swear you in. And I'm like,
I'm here
oh
with
my
Bible.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, isn't this like more of a ceremony? Like, isn't there a Supreme Court justice involved in this or speeches? And I'm trying to get my kid out the door to go to, his daycare. And she's like, no, we just need to swear you in. So there I was, still in my Packer pajamas, taking the oath of office, signing the oath, and the rest was kind of history.
Yeah, that really does sound, downright dirty, and it sounds like you really, really put a lot of thought into that, and this was all a big scheme from the beginning. For sure, it was. Yeah.
Now in a lot of states, the Secretary of State has major. A major role in the elections, right? Like Jocelyn Benson in Michigan, who's the Secretary of State. She's very much involved in the elections in Michigan. But that's not true in Wisconsin. So what is the role of the Secretary of State in Wisconsin?
So we do everything from whether it is working to help with international services. So you think about adoptions, or you think about expanding your business, or you're trying to study abroad. So we're kind of the State Department representative. So we're the only one that can kind of authenticate that paperwork. And when I got into the office, I'm getting these letters from foreign dignitaries congratulating me on this appointment. And I'm like, why am I getting all these letters? And they're like, Sarah, our office processes over 14,000 cases. Wow. And so whether it is, you know, a family in Appleton that has been trying to adopt a child and, you know, they've really are excited about, you know, this adoption opportunity with, you know, with India, to a mom and pop shop who is really excited because they're able to expand their business to Canada. So we do all that work. You know, we're also the top record keeper for the state. So whether it is, you know, records for the governor or for the legislature or for local government, we have an economic development role. A lot of my colleagues across the state actually use their international role to advocate for their state to do things like buy Wisconsin or, you know, advocating for workers or for key industries. And so these are kind of a handful of, I would say, the portfolio things that the office does. And, you know, I will say, Tony, that while we do not administer elections, one of the things that we, you know, I think that we are uniquely positioned to be advocating for democracy. And that's something that, you know, we've been working on and in our partnerships.
That's a major initiative of yours right now, is it not?
Yes. Yeah. Because I feel like one of the things that we know about is that the folks that administer elections, we have seen firsthand that they have been attacked.
Absolutely.
And when they try to speak up, they are attacked to no end. I mean, I am talking to folks across the state who are, you know, they're leaving their positions. They're worried about their safety. And that's what they want them to do. They want them to be silenced. And that's just not how democracy works. And we're just not going to allow this bullying to succeed.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but this whole bullying thing, isn't it just seem like that's the pattern right now?
Yeah.
It's bullying, whether it be via lawsuit or calls and emails or false ads or just the crazy media. It's all bullying. All of it.
Well, we just heard on the news break, they're going to try and impeach Megan Wolf.
Yeah.
Talk about bullying.
Yeah.
Well, and what's really funny is that I heard that actually Voss is being bullied into doing it.
Yeah, exactly. There was a full-page ad in the Journal Sentinel this morning that told Voss, either impeach Megan Wolf or you're going.
And the ad was full of non-truths.
Yeah.
But that you get, so bullying, it's just, it's out of control. So talk about, you've been on this path, you've been on a tour of municipalities, working in different communities, kind of working together. Tell us what you're working on.
So one of our major efforts is we are modernizing the office. So if you need services from us, whether that is working on like the adoption work or you're trying to get certain paperwork done for businesses, you have to either come to us in person, which by the way, Tony and Chris, you're always welcome to Madison, or you have to do things via snail mail. And so we are undergoing a major modernization effort to provide these services online and making them accessible, because Wisconsinites deserve a government that works for them. Mm-hmm. And in order for it to work for them, we got to meet folks where they are, because their time and their resources are precious. And we expect, I think, a lot when we have folks just coming to us and we're not able to deliver in the way that I believe that we should.
You know, there seem to be a lot of offices in Madison that are trying to do that, and the requests are out there to staff up, to change technology, to upgrade services, and the purse strings tend to be pulled tight, and the funding to actually accomplish that is not free-flowing. Are you having the same problem?
Well, I think one of the things that I've been really proud about is how can we be scrappy to get these things done. Mm-hmm. And so while we have seen firsthand that the Republicans have created barriers to ensuring that we can best deliver these services, we're just not going to let us that stop us. And, you know, one of the things that I did when I first got to office was we changed this whole process with how, for example, some of these applications come in, these cases, and there was a huge backlog. Mm-hmm. And we not only addressed the backlog, but the process now is much more efficient.
Yeah.
And so it has been kind of thinking through what are ways that we can kind of provide, I think, better services, knowing again that, you know, the Republicans are going to do whatever they can to try to create these barriers and stop us from doing that. But we're just not going to let them win.
It floors me. We got 2 minutes before we head into our last break. But it floors me how, you know, there every time in election season, there's conversation after conversation from our friends on the red side that say nothing's getting done and the backlog on licensing and the backlog on this and that. And yet people don't realize they're the ones that are holding the purse strings and not allowing any of these departments to staff up to get caught up. They literally are causing the issue, and then they complain and point fingers at the other side for not fixing it.
Right. Starve government and then say government
it's
doesn't
ridiculous.
Work.
Right. But again, that's not the story. That's not the story that we hear. The story is there's $150,000 people or 150,000 people waiting for this and that. Well, everybody knows how to fix it, but they don't release the dollars to allow us to do it.
Yeah, and I think, Chris, what from my end, what gets so frustrating is my office costs zero tax dollars. Everything that we do, we generate our own revenue by the services we provide. But yet, we have to, because we are set at a cap, we give hundreds of thousands of dollars back to the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not even allowed to keep the revenue that we work hard to earn to improve services. And yet, to your point, they're going to be like, oh, secretaries of state office, inefficient, can't do their job.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because of their way of manipulating the system that stops government from working.
Absolutely. Oh, the chaos we deal with. But we're having fun working our way through it. We've got Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski with us tonight. Tony and I are here having some fun. This is our final break. Hang on with us as we bring Sarah back and we talk about these meetings locally and what she's trying to do to help your town. Come on back. Rational Revolution. Back to Rational Revolution on a Thursday, where tonight we realize that Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski is smarter than the rest of us. She is, and I am so excited to call her my friend and my Secretary of State. So tell us, Sarah, tell us as in our last segment, we got about 7 minutes here, but let's talk about these meetings that you're having locally and how you're trying to impact our communities and workforce and all that stuff. Tell us what you're working on.
I mean, I think one of the things that became very clear is just how much mis and disinformation there is about government and the role that we play and, you know, even about my office. And so when that became very clear within my first week, one of the top priorities is we've got to start showing up to communities across the state and talking about this office and the important role that it plays and also listening to what it is that Wisconsinites want and expect from government, because my mom, who's as I mentioned, a retired public school teacher, she would always joke with me. She's like, Sarah, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. So I hope you do more listening and less talking when you're traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's showing up and listening and together kind of figuring out how we can ensure the Secretary of State is best serving our state.
I think and most of us in the public sector are, you know, we're a little complacent, right? I mean, I've claimed that of myself in terms of politics in the past. We don't really know because something may or may not be affecting us. We don't really even realize it's affecting us.
Right.
But as soon as we start to pay attention and we start to open up the book a little bit and read how things are actually going and what's supposed to be happening and what has been happening, we realize that there are issues. We, you know, in our conversation with you tonight, we've learned that the GOP was literally trying to shut down the treasurer's office. I believe you told me one time that the phone didn't even work when you got in that office.
Right. And look, they've been trying to shut down the Secretary of State's office.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they just are trying to get rid of these constitutional offices that serve as a check and balance,
right.
As a way to kind of consolidate power. And I honestly think give people less of a voice.
Yeah.
It's just on their democracy.
We're in a strange, strange place right now. I know on the national level, I just heard that, I'm not sure the name of the gentleman, but just recently, one of the more rational Republicans, I have plenty of Republican friends, but a lot of the more moderate, rational conservatives are just leaving. I know that they're leaving Madison, they're leaving Washington. And I think what's scary is that what's coming in behind them, as we talk about the knowledge and the experience that you have bringing into these positions, we're getting more and more candidates that are more and more extreme with less and less knowledge of actually how things work. So we're literally putting bullies in as opposed to people that are trying to do good for the people of Wisconsin. And I don't know how we fix that. Bottom line is, none of us that work in public service, you never really make enough to do it.
Yeah.
They can't be on a, as an alderman in Appleton, you're making $6,000 a year to sit through and answer questions. And on a state level, $56,000 a year to be bantered and dragged through the mud on a regular basis. There's no one's making a good living doing it. And at some point in time, the people that see garbage as garbage are just leaving.
Yeah.
So we're losing the problem solvers. And I think you are a great example of being a scrappy problem solver who enjoys talking and listening to people. And by doing that, you can help find what's wrong so that you can then make a concerted effort to fix it. And the sad part is that there's fewer and fewer of people like you in leadership, in Madison, in Washington. And how do we get ahead on that? How do we start changing the dynamics so we can start getting leaders and problem solvers back in position?
Well, for me, I think something that gives me a lot of hope in the work that we've been doing across the state is we've been partnering with kind of some after-school programs and to do this work called civics trivia, where we're talking about how government works and their impact to make sure their voice matters. And at the end of it, you're not expecting these middle schoolers or high schoolers to be like, "Woo, government, this is awesome." but that's exactly how they've been at the end. They're like, "I can't wait." They're like, "I want to be a clerk when I grow up," or "I can't wait to volunteer in my next election." And to me, I think that's where we start, that's where we're seeing the hope, is that it's these, kids and these young people who are getting excited and saying, "I do believe my voice matters, and I'm going to make sure that people hear it."
Right. Well, I work with millennial generation students at UW-Oshkosh, and I'll tell you, the majority of them do not have any interest in bullying and coercion. Yep. And I'm confident that that generation coming up is a problem-solving generation.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of the hardcore activists these days are literal teenagers, and I think that is a good sign. Don't you agree, Sarah?
I think it's a huge sign. I mean, when we were thinking, even look at the Supreme Court race. I mean, folks were like, "You can't take away my right to abortion."
Yeah.
Like, that's my right. And I don't want you to determine who I can and cannot love and attacking LGBTQ rights or attacking, we need to do something and to address climate change. And so I do believe that they care about their future, and they're going to fight for it.
I wish that in a perfect world that everyone would pay attention and everyone would vote, right? I mean, because there's a whole bracket of people out there that are apolitical.
Yeah.
They choose not to pay attention. They choose not to get involved. And yet, whether you're paying attention or voting or not, you are being affected. And many times it's negatively. And then we end up with this kind of a condescending thing where it's all the people's fault that are there. But if we aren't showing up to vote in quality, or if we are showing up and falling victim to the nonsense, then bottom line is we're all guilty in this, all of us, for not realizing how things affect us on an ongoing basis. Listen, we've got about a minute left, but Sarah, I got to tell you, I have enjoyed very much getting to know you in the last, is it a year and a half now? Is it a year and
yes,
a half?
Yes, I think that's when you were getting ready for your race,
yes. Right? So I mean, it's just a pleasure to get to know you and understand that there are some really, really good quality, well-intentioned people that are working in Madison. You are without question one of them. I hope you are there or moving on to do whatever it is you choose for the good of the state of Wisconsin. I will be a supporter of yours, and I hope others are as well. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Rational Revolution tonight. Again, I am Chris Alfheim with my friend Tony Palmieri. Next week, by the way, I am going to be out. I have to work. It happens every now and then. But Tony and our good conservative friend Dean Rash Ooh. Will be running the show tomorrow. You two mind your manners. I'm not going to be here to keep you separated. But have a great week, and we will talk to you again. Rational Revolution. Enjoy, everybody. Thanks, Sarah. Bye.